Hello and welcome to Arcane Connection number 7. And today I have the great pleasure to be joined by the president of Black Chicken Games, which many of you will remember from the Ars Magica Kickstarter for a computer game earlier in the year. So if I'd just like to say hello.
Hello.
Would you like to introduce yourself and just say a little bit about, you know, your company and why you're here today?
Yeah, sure. My name's Larry. President, Black Chicken Studios. We are here because we love to make unique and diverse and interesting games. I think as a whole, as a company, we're motivated by the fact that, well, out there in the market, you see a lot of games which, you know, are generally speaking just about repetitive sort of hacking through, you know, issues and problems, and we wanted to do something a little bit different and maybe open up a new market for people who wanted a different sort of experience in their games. I think as to why we're here today, this is an awesome podcast.
One thing I was going to say about your games is that one of the things I really, really get bored by in games is what I call grind, which is when it's, you know, hit shift control L 55 times to get enough points, and, you know, it's something that a lot of games don't in any way reward intelligent planning or intelligent thought. So if it was somebody coming from the wargaming and role-playing perspective and from that community, computer games can be quite limiting. And I was delighted when I played through some of your games to find that that was really not the case. But perhaps they're a little bit too technical, a little bit too complex for the general audience?
Well, you know, we've had all kinds of feedback. Some people tell us that our games are very grindy. Some people tell us that they're too complex. We basically came at it from a point of view of role-playing in terms of a possibility space. We wanted you to be able to create your characters. We wanted you to be able to sort of interact with the environment in a way which was limited by, you know, your imagination. But it is a different kind of game. It does require you to play in a different way than you might commonly expect with any other game that you pick up off the shelf. So I think
you're playing
that's sort
character?
Of the source of those criticisms. I think there is some merit to them both, of course, but
I thought that in the game I can't pronounce, which we will call Scheherazade. Can you pronounce it?
Yeah, Scheherazade. Well, I mean, God knows how you actually pronounce that.
Well,
we call it Scheherazade.
As I said, I used to teach the Middle East a long time ago, Islam and later religions of India, and I still can't pronounce most terms, and I apologize for that. I blame it on the fact I'm half Danish, so there you go. But, I mean, that has an amazing, evocative storyline, an incredible amount of choice about which partner you pursue, which aims you pursue. I found that a really quite very engaging game, and as I said, maybe that's because I come at it from a role player, so I'm the right kind of person for that kind of game.
Yeah, well, of course, we would argue that everybody's the right person for that, but I think that culturally speaking, you know, on both sides of the Atlantic, we've been taught that games are something with a very defined goal that you press a couple of buttons to achieve, you know, over and over and over.
Yeah.
And I think people have sort of lost that innocence of, you know, cops and robbers that they play when they're kids, you know, that sort of imaginative role-playing. I mean, it's the same conversation we were having in D&D 1st edition and 2nd edition and 3rd edition.
Yeah.
There's always that difference between very strongly goal-oriented players and people who are interested in role-playing.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, one of the interesting things about that particular game, though, was that it appealed to my female housemates, who aren't really gamers in the traditional sense. I mean, if I tried to get them to play an Avalon Hill war game, they would look at me completely askance. But computer games, they're something they're very, very passionate about and enjoy, and they were very, very, very interested in the storyline. So, yeah. So, okay, how did you come... I interviewed you once before about the Ars Magica Kickstarter, but how did you come to decide to negotiate to make a Ars Magica computer game, because that was a particularly exciting project for all of us, and I think quite a lot of people are very, very disappointed that it didn't go ahead. So,
oh God, no one's more disappointed than us. I could tell you that much. We're big on tabletop. Each of us has our own sort of group, and sometimes we game together. We run all kinds of different games, ranging from D&D to Shadowrun to Weapons of the Gods to Ars Magica. And whereas with most other games, you know, the focus is very strongly on, you know, combat and, you know, the gaining of gold, which is, you know, awesome. You know, kind of the standard staple of many games. But with Ars Magica, it's really very, very strongly about role-playing. Now, there is an aspect to it of dungeons and whatnot, and that's it's always a fun to, you know, take your flambeau mage and go roast some, you know, some knights who are attacking. The real heart of the game is that dynamic within the Covenant. You know, the interaction between the characters and the interaction between yourselves and medieval Europe, which, you know, living in modern times is just fascinating. That's sort of where we were coming from with that.
For me, one of the most interesting things about it was the fact that in other games, historically, the characters have started relatively weak, but with very clearly defined goals of, you know, want power, want gold, want this, want that, want to progress. In Ars Magica, the only kind of progression really is increasing power level through academic study, which is quite a strange concept. And you start off with so much power and so many options that really it's all about defining your character through what you want to do with your life, which is a bit like real life for a lot of us people in the West. You know, we start off with reasonable degrees of ability and reasonable degrees of decent educations, and it's about doing something with life that we find meaningful and useful. And so I find it very similar in that way, but I can relate to Ars Magica better than I can relate to other things. But like yourself, I'm an old gamer. I played D&D, I played Shadowrun, I played Traveller, I played a great deal of Call of Cthulhu, a great fan.
Oh, yes, we actually have a Halloween game that we play by candlelight.
Okay, I wrote the Parapsychologist's Handbook, which was the first of the monographs at a time when Chaosium
was I own a copy of that. I did not realize that was you.
Yeah, that's me. I'm Chris Jerome on the cover because it fitted better than Chris Jensen Roma.
I see.
Okay, so yeah, that's me. So okay, so the Ars Magica Kickstarter, the thing that really excited a lot of us, how's D'Edne?
Yeah, well, it fit actually with our time frame. So you know, this is pie in the sky, obviously, since the Kickstarter did unfortunately not fund. But our original intention was, our hope was, that we would be able to do a series of games, and each game would be a century in length. And the idea was we wanted to tell the story of this covenant from 1066 to 1966.
Oh, wow!
With the idea that, Or I should say 1000 to 2000, with the idea that it would sort of begin with an invasion of England from Normandy and end with an invasion of Normandy from England. Which we sort of enjoy that historical parallel. So we crafted up this rather lengthy, you know, story that would guide over, you know, 10 centuries. But beginning in 1000, I mean, this is before the Schism War, so it just made sense that we give the player the option to sort of take part in that.
And was it going to be seasonal, or was it going to be yearly? I mean, I wasn't...
Oh, it would have been yearly. I mean, much depends on... So, you know, the unfortunate business reality is that we went out to Kickstarter with the idea that other people would react very strongly to the brand. And unfortunately, that didn't happen.
No.
But in order for a real series of games to have taken place, we would have needed to fund at least the basic level, and then have sales on the release side that would enable us to really, pursue this as a sequel.
The problem is that I suspect a lot of role players even today are not particularly wealthy. It seems to be a strong... You know, many of us now have children. I don't, I only have cats, but others have, we all have family commitments, we all have to pay the rent, we all have to hold a job.
Say no more.
And I think the levels of money available in the role-playing community are probably not that of the typical computer gamer who's used to paying $70 for a decent game. And yet role-players, you know, still expect to get a good supplement for $25 that they'll play for 10 years off. So,
well, I think there's some merit to what you say as well. I mean, the unfortunate thing is that actually the amount that we went to Kickstarter with was actually only half the sum needed to develop the game. The other half, you know, I was going to put in from the company. But, you know, making video games is not, sadly, No, not an inexpensive proposition.
We have,
and unfortunately, you know, it looked like the material interest was not there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you're not going to get the sales, there's no point in developing the game. The tragedy of that, of course, is that it would have improved the brand recognition for Ars Magica. It would have improved sales for the role-playing game. It might have meant that authors like me would have been, you know, steady and wealthy in our dotage. And jokes aside, I mean, you know, it's an expensive business. We've got a couple of game companies, production companies based here in Cheltenham, and I know a few designers and artists, and I know just how incredibly expensive the development process is and how small sometimes the returns can be. So it's a daunting and dismal process at times. So still,
although it would just, you know, it would be so worth it. If we could somehow manage to pull it off, it would be fantastic. Because, I mean, leaving aside our general mission to sort of expand the scope of games out there in the marketplace, I mean, there's something very wonderful about the power of Ars Magica's magic system, the setting itself, and of course the sort of covenant drama and role-playing. I mean, really, it's nowhere else in the game market that anyone's attempted to do something on that level. So,
well, it did strike me that
we have hope. We have hope.
Programming it would be a nightmare, though. I mean, the spontaneous magic, for example, would that be covered at all? Would you stick to the formulaic magic?
Yeah, no, actually, spontaneous wasn't as well. The way that we handled it is we sort of flag problems. Like, this is a problem that can be dealt with by damage. This is a problem that can be dealt with by intimidation.
Yeah.
Some of these flags got pretty specific. Others were fairly general in our design doc. And each spell, in turn, was tagged with these sort of, you know, flags. So if you went into a situation where, you know, you might need a damage spell, but you didn't have one, you could cast a spell spontaneously at a certain level to generate the effect that you needed.
One of the things that was interesting for me was that the Ars Magica Authors community, there were quite a few of us who bought lottery tickets in the last week of the Kickstarter, just in the hope that we could, you know, win a million or two and actually afford to fund it on our own. Mark Lawford, I think, you know, would have sold his house had he had that opportunity, but I suspect his family might have objected. But yeah, I mean, you know, and I was willing to sell myself on the streets of Cheltenham, but sadly that's not really a viable proposition.
We do not endorse that proposition.
No. But, you know, there was a great deal of enthusiasm, and it had taken a while to build. The problem was we knew the fan community knew nothing about the Kickstarter coming, and then most of the fan community seemed to have a problem with how to communicate with people outside of the fan community why they should be interested. I mean, I spent ages flagging it on Facebook and going onto computer game forums, and I know Mark did the same thing. We were trying to get a wider audience interested, because what we needed to do was to build enthusiasm amongst those people who used to be role players but who were now computer game players. And I mean, that's a big market.
Well, you know, the thing is that with Kickstarters, with game Kickstarters, you have essentially two types. You have the first type, which is brand. And if your brand is very well known and very exciting, you can succeed on brand merits. And that's actually what we tried to do with the Ars Magica Kickstarter. And you see that,
I see that
kind of success in most of these very large Kickstarter, you know, game Kickstarters that go out there. You know, I mean, they're not showing gameplay video. They're not showing, you know, footage of an actual engine. They're just saying, hey, this is us, so this is what we want to do, and people are reacting. I know I myself reacted to these in many cases. I would just, you know, Shadowrun? Oh, here, let me just throw some money at you.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't even bother to watch the video. The other type where you see some success occurring is with people who have, you know, very advanced prototypes. The problem with that is that it costs money to build. So, you know, you can spend a great deal of money building a prototype and, you know, showing it off and still not achieve your Kickstarter. And for a small company such as us, that probably doesn't make a lot of sense for our business model.
No, the development cost would be ridiculous, and if it didn't go through, then it would just be lost money. So, yeah. Okay, how's D'Edna? Last question about D'Edna. I know that Mark's doing, he's, I don't know if you've ever seen the Ars Magica fanzine Sub Rosa, but it is a very high quality production.
Oh yes, absolutely.
And Mark is doing, next issue is on House D'Edna, different authors' takes on House D'Edna, and I think that'll be quite interesting. One of the questions I was going to ask is, could you play a D'Edna Magus? Could they win the Schism War in your setting?
No, you could not win the Schism War in the setting.
Okay, so history would continue as in Ars Magica 5th edition. We weren't going to suddenly see House D'Edna taking over the Order, because that was something that had amused me.
So the way that we intended on having that was, as a D'Edna mage, you had essentially two choices. Three choices, I should say. The first choice, of course, is to become a secret D'Edna. You know, you renounce your house, renounce your ties, renounce your magic, and but remain a secret practitioner and, you know, take on apprentices to sort of leave your legacy. The second option is to actually renounce your house and please the Quaesitors. And the third option was to resist. But that third option inevitably ends the game, one way or another.
Okay, right. Well, I've got another question to ask, which is, obviously I came over from the Atlas Games Forums to the Black Chicken Games Forums, where we're playing Ars Magica on the forum at the moment. It's an unusual game because the players chose they wanted to be members of a flying city, and the background they developed didn't have much to do with medieval Europe, so I've been sort of taking them down in their flying rowing boat to intervene in crucial events in European history. But was there much interest from the Ars Magica community in the other games? I mean, Academagia? It seems like a superb game for anybody who plays Ars Magica.
Academagia. Who knows how you actually pronounce that? There was some interest. We definitely saw a sales, you know, bump during the period of that Kickstarter. How many of them were Ars Magica fans, though, I don't actually know. Most people who play games are, you know, they're sort of the silent majority. Yeah. They might pop onto the forum to read a FAQ or see if somebody has a good strategy. But for the most part, it takes a special kind of person to be active on a forum.
But you've got so many people who are active all the time on your forums. They're very busy forums. And I've chatted to a few people.
I guess that's true, yes.
I spoke to Zoo Queen and Legacy and many others. And, you know, I've made some good friends on your forums. It's great. It's a thriving community of people who are passionately into what Black Chicken are about, which is intelligent minority games. And they are great games. So that brings us to the obvious thing, which is, before we go back to the question which we'll leave till the very end, which is, you know, is there any hope or future for the project or another Kickstarter, let's start with what's happening now, which is, of course, Heldfast. Can you tell me a bit about it?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure, as many old-school gamers go, you know, we whiled away rainy afternoons or sunny afternoons with game books. Lone Wolf and Fighting Fantasy there in the UK, and of course in the 90s you had the Fablelands, which is a great take on the on exploration in a game book.
Let's not forget TSR, because TSR did Choose Your Own Adventure. Was that what it was? No.
Yeah.
I think it was called
Somebody reminded me just the other day on the team that they did, what was it, Heart Quest.
That was what I was going to say. For teenage ladies. Girls. Yeah. Yeah, so, romantic stories. I've always tried to find
it. It was the 80s. It was a different time. But, we're huge fans of game books, and the real background, the real sort of hidden history to Heldfast is that we're doing another Kickstarter.
Yeah.
But only the coding team is involved on this particular game, so the content team is sort of sitting around, and we have year two editing, and for Academagia, we have year two editing and some writing going on. Right. But you know, we also had a lot of sort of our production writers who can't really be involved in the editing phase, just sitting around with their hands, you're just sitting on their hands.
You could get
after Ars Magica, we thought, well, what can we do with just purely a writing team? And a lot of our fans had said, you should make Scheherazade a book. And we thought, well, we don't think we want to take Scheherazade in a book direction, but what if we did a game book? Yep. And so we took a look at our favorite books, and there was a story that we wanted to tell. Originally, we were going to tell it from the perspective of the Dark Elves, who you'll meet in Holdfast. But then we decided that going with the dwarves would be a lot more fun, a lot more interesting. You know, you have the sort of archetypical dwarf, hard beer-drinking berserker with an axe, and we wanted to really explore dwarven culture and how they sort of might give rise to that cliche, as well as other, you know, sort of interesting dwarven, you know, standout, you know, concepts.
I'm tempted to make jokes about Glasgow and Scotland here, but I won't, in case I'm wrong. So, no.
The true origin of dwarves in modern fantasy is indeed Scotland.
Yeah, well, the thing about dwarves is they are such fascinating archetypal characters, and from Tolkien onwards, I mean, I think actually if you go back to The Hobbit, they are the most interesting characters in The Hobbit, to me, more so than Hobbits. But anyway, so Holdfast is a game book. In the old fighting fantasy style, do you need dice to play it, or will it run off an app? How does it work? Tell me some more about the mechanical systems.
Well, there is an app. Actually, we've partnered up with Tin Man Games, who have a pre-existing app platform for game books, which we're using to bring Holdfast over. Primarily, of course, we're going to be creating the content.
Yep.
It is available for print. It's also available for Droid and Mac and PC. That was only the first part of your question. What was the second part?
Well, I was interested in how the mechanics work. I mean, does it use a D10?
Dice.
Yeah.
Yes, you need D10s. You also will need a full set of standard polyhedrons, you know, D4 to D20 as well.
D&D.
We have a boom table, which is a bit like testing your luck in fighting fantasy.
Yeah.
If you're familiar with that mechanic.
Yeah.
The app itself has a pretty cool dice roller in it with physics and everything. But for the actual print book, you'll need dice.
So the app will be on Android or iPhone or both?
It'll be out on Android, Mac, and PC. It's also going to be... hold on just a moment. It's also going to be... on iPhone, but the iStore, or the Apple Store, as we understand it, does not allow us to give out codes as part of a Kickstarter campaign.
Okay.
As a result, unfortunately, we're not able to offer it.
No. But, I mean, the app will be something that I think will obviously reach an awful lot of people, and there's a great deal of nostalgia for the old fighting fantasy game books in the UK. Non-gamers I know still, you know, sometimes pick them up. I was going to suggest, when I thought that your story team weren't doing anything, that you went on eBay and bought them a selection of HeartQuest books to play, but I assume that the romantic lives of dwarves are not covered in great detail in this game.
Nor will they be in Holdfast, I'm afraid.
We'll skip over this obvious story in the project that we're not dealing with the romantic lives of dwarves. I think I'm going to shudder now. So, moving on, Holdfast. Tell me, what's the actual setting? What has happened to the dwarves in Holdfast? Why is there an adventure?
So, if you reach back into dwarven myth-making and their gods, when the gods first created a place for them, it was Seven Helms, and they gave them seven crowns so that there would be seven dwarven kingdoms here beneath the Stormwall Mountains. Now, the dwarves have many enemies, and that includes within their own pantheon, as it turns out. And each time their kingdoms have, you know, been thrown into civil war or disarray or destroyed by external foes, the dwarves have always retreated into Seven Helms to rebuild, to prepare, and to wait for the darkness to subside.
So it's their homeland and their heartland and their sacred place.
Yes, and the walls have never before been breached. So this is now the dawning of the Fourth Age. This is the third time that the dwarves have been driven out of their kingdoms and had to seek refuge in Seven Helms. And you, as a penniless dwarven adventurer, are out there in the tunnels. You are exploring, you are reclaiming, you are treasure hunting. And something happens which will enable you to sort of take control of this important ancient fortress and build it up basically from the ground up.
Okay. That sounds like you've got enough material here for a whole RPG setting. Will there be an RPG source book under an open game license or for something such as Pathfinder?
Yes. I take it you've read our reward tiers. That is correct. As early as $35, I think, for Pathfinder, you can get a copy of the OGL Pathfinder compatible setting. Yeah, we produce pretty elaborate world documents. The one for Agaramaji is like 150, 200 pages long, something insane like that.
I've read a lot of material.
We did one that was pretty hefty for just the high-level design for Ars Magica. Scheherazade, same deal. So, you know, we really get into world building. So, you know, we figured that would be a fun award to share with you guys at the end of the Kickstarter.
When I was reading about Akademagia, which I still can't say, on the forums, I did notice the incredible
complexity. You can pronounce it any way you want to.
Are there 9 different spheres of magic in it? There's different... I mean, the level of complexity of the game is so great that if my PC does ever decide to run it... And I must stress that my PC is 8 years old and has a wonky graphics card and overheats regularly and has cats not water over it. So that's why I can't run it, not because of any other issue. Because your games are actually compatible on most people's PCs nowadays, aren't they? They run on the majority of modern PCs. In fact, you don't need a state-of-the-art gaming machine because they're turn-based, and although they're graphically intense, they're not, you know, resource-intensive, are they?
Well, for Akademagi in particular, you actually need a little bit more of a robust computer because it loads this entire mega database into your memory. And if you don't have enough memory, we've actually had some players who have experienced out-of-memory exceptions. If you don't have enough memory, you know, it'll really chug. Because Akademagi tracks, like, all of the doings of every character in the game, and it can be pretty large.
I mean, I'm used to running heavy resource software like Envivo, which is something used for qualitative analysis. I've spent a lot of time recently feeding in details of cases of poltergeist activity, reports of poltergeist activity from around the world, and conducting massive database queries on that. And I mean, that's pretty, you know, I don't know how many gigabytes I've got, 2 or 3 gigabytes of material now. So you can imagine that I'm quite used to dealing with resource-heavy things. So I hope my PC will make it work. My laptop will run it anyway. So it's a game that would appeal to Ars Magica fans, so surely.
I mean, funny, you know, we're showing our roots now, but Akademagia's magic system was inspired by Ars Magica's system. You know, again, what can I say? We love the power. We love the scientific approach, as well as the artistic approach to medieval magic. And Akademagia is rather different. It's based more on sort of ideals and the expression of those ideals in the real world. But there are analogs to Ars Magica, yes. I think Ars Magica players would probably be able to intuitively understand you know, some of the mechanics behind the magic, you know, more so than people who aren't familiar with it, for sure.
And in fact, one of the ways in which we could support any kind of future initiative would be to buy some Black Chicken games, play them and publicize them, because I'm sure if you're wealthy enough, you would return to the Kickstarter one day.
Well, this is true. This is true.
I mean, is there any chance that we will one day see the Ars Magica game you wanted to see come into existence, or would it just require such a vast expansion in the Ars Magica audience as to be unlikely this decade?
Well, there's always a chance. So there are 3 ways to tackle the problem, and we've devoted it, you know, internally. The first way that we could do it is simply to go back to Kickstarter. This is not very attractive because we didn't succeed the first time. So if we're coming back a second time, we have to have something more to show. And that requires an investment from ourselves. But the problem with that is that unless we believe that there is a huge, underserved, untapped Ars Magica market, which did not appear during the Kickstarter, you know, round one, well, then, you know, round two looks really dicey.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
So that's a little sketchy. The second way that we could approach it is we could go to Kickstarter for a prototype. We could say, okay, you asked for us to show you, you know, a working prototype of this so that we can, you know, get a larger audience so that people can understand what it is and how it will work and how it will play out. But to do that requires an investment, which, you know, we're going to ask you to share the risk for.
Yep.
The problem with that, to me, as a consumer is, as an Ars Magica fan is, if we did do it that way, and we created this prototype, let's say we were successful with the Kickstarter and we create this prototype, and then we then take this prototype and we go to Kickstarter again and say, you know, okay, please fund this project. If no one shows up, well, we just would have wasted a lot of Ars Magica fans' money, which, yeah. To me, again, as a fan, you know, I don't want to contribute to a prototype. I want to contribute to a final product, something that I can actually play. So, again, we're kind of, I'm not sure about that one. The final way that we could approach it is we could rather drastically cut down the design of an Ars Magica game. We could make the game play out a bit closer to Scheherazade, which
it's a lovely game.
You know,
it's a great
content
game.
Heavy, but game mechanics light.
Yeah.
Sorry, you were saying something?
Yes, I would actually go with that option because I think, you know, a game mechanics light version would be just as attractive because the setting, although the magic system is perhaps the key to its appeal, for a lot of us, we would be happy to play anything set in Mythic Europe, you know, and that would build awareness. So I would be really excited by that, actually, because I've enjoyed your other games and I think it could work. But, you know, that was just me interrupting rudely. Sorry, carry on.
No, I mean, it's totally viable. We could, you know, in theory do that, and we could, and it's a, the amount that we'd need to produce something like that would be dramatically less than 290K. It would, I'm not sure exactly where it'd be, it might be, you know, on the order of, you know, 40 or so. But the biggest problem with that is that, Ars Magica fans are quite diverse. When we looked at the numbers in our Kickstarter campaign, what we discovered is that the majority of the people who kicked us were people who didn't really know about Ars Magica. There were people who were either familiar with our games or they were familiar with, you know, computer games and were sort of like, well, what's this? This seems interesting.
Yeah.
The number of Ars Magica fans out there are, you know, relatively few in number.
Yeah.
I think we could achieve success with a Ars Magica Kickstarter, and we could do a visual novel, you know, for Ars Magica. But
you really want
as a player of the game, I just feel like, you know, it would not be Ars Magica. It would be a story that I'd be reading, and it would be cool. But I think that it would not be the essence of the game, maybe.
Okay, there's one fourth option, which of course occurs to me as a previous TV researcher and writer and script writer, which is we could create a Ars Magica movie or an Ars Magica TV series if we could only make Ars Magica a wider known brand, you know. But I don't know if that's going to go that way.
That's probably a little out of our personal experience.
Yeah, absolutely. But
sure, I'd watch that show.
If it ever grows, I mean, if there was more, if the fan community grows, perhaps. But as you say, it's interesting that it wasn't the Ars Magica fans who came through. I mean, the thing that really appealed to a lot of the people on the forums was the D'Edne book, which they desperately wanted to see.
Yes.
They desperately wanted to see that. And it's just such a dreadful, dreadful pity. But Holdfast, I think, has great enough potential for anyone from the RPG background. And your other games, like Academagia, he tries to say it again, it really should appeal to an awful lot of Ars Magica fans. Well, this has been Larry Saw, the CEO, president of Black Chicken. And Black Chicken can be found at blackchicken.com, I believe, www.blackchicken.com. Is that right?
I think it's at blackchickengames.com.
Blackchickengames.com. I'm rubbish. Okay. Despite going to your forum daily, I still can't remember the website address. So, thank you so much for taking so much time out to talk to us. Is there anything else you'd like to say about the future plans of the company that might be of interest to Ars Magica players?
Well, we do have a pretty interesting product, a new game, which will again be coming to Kickstarter here once we wrap up Holdfest, which is a procedural game, and I think that yeah, it's pretty cool. It's a little roguelike, not too intensive for your computer. Plenty of magic and some other fun surprises in it. That, you know, that's on the horizon. And then we also have Akademagia Year 2, which, thank God, will have a much better interface and deal with some of those complexity issues that you mentioned at the beginning. But, you know, other than that, no, just like you guys, we're sort of hoping that there'll be some mystical sign and we'll return to the Ars Magica, you know, game one way or another.
Well, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much. This has been Arcane Connection number 7, and I've been talking to the president of Black Chicken. Thank you for your time.
Absolutely. Take care.